Hi, everybody. First, before I forget it, which I probably shall, I've forgotten everything right now. If you've ever known a vacuum, I'm it. I wish to thank the committee for inviting me. Lofta said this morning for sending me the plane ticket. I'm wondering right at the moment why I came, but I do appreciate it very much. This has been an experience to me that certainly is going to enrich me in the days to come. I've listened to and been here for every meeting since the early bird meeting of Wednesday night and heard all the speakers. And with each and every one of them, I got a greater feeling of inadequacy, wondering all the time, again, I repeat, why I came, and wondering what I could say that would be constructive in addition to what has already been said by these wonderful speakers that have preceded me. As you can tell, probably, by my accent, louder, which is the right mic here. As you can probably tell, I'm a Yankee, which reminds me of a story that I was told today by one of the retail store salesman. I was prowling around in one of the stores, and he told me a story that I kind of liked, and I'd like to share it with you. It seems that one of your members of the Birmingham group went to Canton, Ohio recently, and up at the corner of 2nd and Market North, you were walking along the sidewalk, and there was an amputee with both arms and both legs off, and in front of him he had his hat for contributions with some pencils in the hat. This member walked past him and then stopped suddenly as he got by, and he said he walked back to him and he peeled a $10 bill from his wallet and he put it in the hat. Naturally, the amputee was astounded. He couldn't understand it. And he said, boy, I sure appreciate that, and I need that, he said, but I can't understand your generosity. He said, I've never known anything like that before. And the member said, think nothing of it, he said. I'm more than happy to do it, he said, because you're the first Yankee I've ever seen in the fix that I'd like to see them all in. This was my third trip into the hospitality of Southern AA. I established a little reputation for myself that at least I think I must have, because it's synonymous with my introduction to anybody, by anybody who was there. They tell the story of my being at Camp Monroe and being able to outtalk a thunderstorm. I was at Blackstone also, and I'm here. And I want to say this. The Southern hospitality is no stranger to me. In my family, my oldest boy married a girl from South Carolina, so I know the graciousness and the hospitality of Southern people right in my own family. I'm happy to be back again. It's a real privilege and it's a real pleasure. And I want you to know I appreciate the invitation. It has been my good fortune to have been associated with this program of AA for quite a long period of time. I am, I suppose, in the classification of one of the patriarchs, one of the guys they refer to as the no-timer. It's been my privilege to have seen a great many things happen in this program. The things that I have seen are unbelievable. I am more thoroughly convinced today, after better than 24 years of association sober with this program, of the things that they told me in the beginning. I am more thoroughly convinced tonight than I have been at any time in my life previously of the workability of this program, of the fact that it has the answer to every single problem that the alcoholic has. And I am more thoroughly convinced this evening than at any time in my life previously of my complete need for and dependence upon this great program of AA. And to you who are new in the program, that may seem like somewhat of an exaggerated statement, as some of the statements that were made to me in the beginning when I was indoctrinated with the philosophy of this program. But to me, it just makes sense. Because of the fact, based on my past experience, as long as I feel the need for this program, and as long as I stay a part of it, and what's more important, its ideals and philosophy stay a part of me, I know that I need never go back into the misery and the grief and the heartache that was so much a part of my life for so many years. I don't tell a very interesting story of drinking. There isn't anything pleasant about my drinking experiences. I'm not going to regale you with a blow-by-blow description. I will tell you a little bit about myself, about the highlights of my drinking career. And I'd like to tell you, though, more about the workings of this program and what it will do for the individual who desires to find the most important thing that he must find in life, the alcoholic. The most important thing that he or she must find and maintain permanently every single day that he or she lives, his or her sobriety. I was an alcoholic from the very first drink that I ever took. It did something for me that I wanted it to do, evidently. And from the very first drink that I ever took, I was in trouble. Now, I've never studied very much about alcoholism. I've never looked into it very closely. I don't know whether it's a disease, whether it's hereditary, or whether somebody dropped me on my head when I was a baby, which is probably what happened to me. Because I don't think that anybody could have been as insane as I was without having something drastic happen in the very beginning. And I think sometimes we confuse ourselves. We make this job most difficult by trying to analyze and psychoanalyze, trying to find out all the whys and wherefores of alcoholism, trying to find out why we became alcoholics, trying to find out the day and date that we passed from the stage of social drinking into the days of problem drinking. When, as a matter of fact, this program is so simple, so easy to understand, so down to earth, and so easy to work, if we'll just accept it without trying to analyze anything about it. What difference does it make when, how, and why we became alcoholics when we come to this great program of AA? What difference does it make when and how and why we passed over that great divide from social drinking into problem drinking? The only thing, if we want to make it easy for ourselves, that should concern us when we become a part of this great program is the fact that we now, as of right now, are alcoholics. Here is a God-given opportunity in this great program of AA to do something about it and ask ourselves the question, what are we going to do about it? It's as simple and as easy and as down to earth as that. And as I said, we sometimes make this simple job so difficult. We've been warned by Dr. Bob through the years, let's keep it simple. Don't luff it up. And still, by the same token, we're always the kind of people who want to know the reason for everything. This is a simple program. It's a down-to-earth, understandable, workable program that has the complete answer for every single thing that the alcoholic needs. And I like to go back to the early days of my indoctrination into this program of AA. And when this great story was unfolded to me, I somehow knew instinctively, don't ask me why, because a little later you'll wonder how I ever knew anything. But I knew instinctively that this was the thing that I had needed all my life. And this was the thing that was going to give me that great opportunity that I wanted again to be a part of things that were decent and right and nice. To be a part of society again, to be a part of business life, to be a part of family life. And as they unfolded this story to me, the very early people in this program, 11 or 12 strong in the city of Cleveland, before the big book was ever written, I have in my possession one of the mimeograph copies of the big book before it was ever printed. The sobriety extended with these people anywhere from one day to 6 months. And to my sponsor, Clarence Snyder, who came into this program in the Oxford Movement in the city of Akron, happened to have been sober for a year and a half when he sponsored me. So that there wasn't too much experience to draw upon. But the zeal of these people, they knew they had found something. And they were able to transmit it to me, the helpless, hopeless drunk, who wanted that one more chance in life. And I shall never forget those early days, and I shall never forget that indoctrination and the friendship of these people and their desire to help me, an unknown, hopeless, down-and-out gutter drunk. And when they started calling me an alcoholic, I had never heard the word before. And when they started calling me, I thought I had advanced into the upper strata of society. Because nobody had ever called me by such a polite name for as many years back as I could remember. I had been called many things, but never an alcoholic. And as they took me one by one, in those early days, one was supposed to be hospitalized before he could come into AA. But that cost money, and I had none of that. So that my sponsor devised a plan whereby I went to the home of one of the newer members on the east side of Cleveland. And they came in and talked to me for 3 nights, these people who were at the program. And they'd take me into a room one by one, and they'd unfold this great story as they understood it. And they told me a lot of things in those 3 nights, and I can't tell you very much about anything that they said, except one thing that has been indelibly impressed in my mind through the years, and I hope it always shall be. And that was this. I've often wished I could remember who said it to me, but I can't. And it was this. This individual said that provided you follow the principles and practices of this program, not only would you find the solution to your drinking problem, but to every single problem that you have in life. And what a prophet he was. But to me, at the moment, that sounded most fantastic and exaggerated. Imagine telling a man who had just come off a 2-year drunk, who'd been on skid row for 2 years, that provided you follow this simple little program of AA, everything would work itself out. No home, no family, no job, no reputation. Every single thing in life that was worthwhile had long since vanished. Spiritually, physically, mentally, morally, and financially, about as bankrupt as anybody could ever possibly hope to be. And to tell me that by the simple process of following these principles, everything would work itself out. And do you know what? It did. It did. And it seems as simple as that. For the first time in my life, and while I might, I had nowhere to go but up. The cards sure were stacked in my favor. Here's one guy that came into this program with nothing to lose. And I knew they had no hocus pocus to offer me. And I knew that they had nothing up their sleeve as far as I was concerned. Because if they thought they could get anything from me, they sure were on the wrong horse that day. I knew it had to be for real. I knew it was for real, and I knew by the attitude of these people, by their friendliness and by their zeal, that they had something that they knew was going to be good for them, and they wanted to give it to everyone else in the world who needed it. And I'll get back to that just a little bit later. And I progressed very rapidly from that first drink that I took at 17. And by the time I was 24 or 25 years of age, I was as confirmed an alcoholic as I was at any time in my life previously. In the meanwhile, I had fallen into a very good business opportunity, the greatest I ever had in my life, had I taken care of it. A position of prestige, a position of promise. And for me, the arrogant, egotistical individual that I was, this was just made to order for me. I could throw my weight around. I could tell people how important I was. I could show them how important I was. And for the alcoholic, that's the kind of a job to have. And I went along on that one for a few years. And the company kept warning me that they didn't like my habits, but I had a very exalted opinion of my importance to that company. As a matter of fact, I had a very great opinion of my own importance from as far back as I could ever remember. I like to say that had I been able to buy myself for what I was actually worth back in those days, and had I been able to peddle myself for the high value that I thought I possessed, I could have retired about the time I was 22 years of age. Too bad I didn't make it, because I hate work. I really do. Gee, you know, every day I get it seems so daily. If somebody could just do something about that, I'd be all right. But at any rate, by the time I was 24 or 25 years of age, as I said, I was a confirmed alcoholic. The company was warning me, but I knew they couldn't do anything about it. They were just trying to throw a scare into me, because how could they ever exist without the great Chisholm? That wouldn't be possible. I might add that they called me in one day and told me they'd try to struggle along without me, and they're still going pretty well. And you know, that didn't bother me. Even that didn't bother me. And I didn't have anything, because I was the kind of a drunk that spent money faster than he ever earned it. Always the big shot. Always the wheel. Always trying to impress people. You can imagine me. I mean, I've got some of it left. And as a matter of fact, I think there are some people that wonder whether I've ever learned anything in this program and that. My wife keeps reminding me from time to time. But seriously, I was the kind of a fellow that was always trying to impress people with the big shot that I was. Always trying to buy the house a drink. You know, leave a nice impression behind it. Maybe it wouldn't have anything at home. Maybe the kids would be hungry. But be sure that when you walked out that door, what a terrific guy he is. And that's the kind of a life that I live. And the beautiful part of AA is that you can always be yourself. That you never have to go around impressing people. That you never have to tell people what a great guy you are, because you can be yourself all the time and they know you for what you really are. That's one of the beautiful things amongst the many beautiful things that happen to people in this great program of AA. And when I lost that job, I didn't worry too much about it because of the fact that I knew just as soon as people found out I was at liberty that they'd be outbidding each other for my services. Well, they evidently didn't find out. Because I went from a position that was fairly good into the business gutter. And in order to survive, and way back there, my reputation had preceded me as an undependable, unreliable drunk. Nobody wanted any part of me, in spite of all the great ability that I thought I possessed. Everyone seemed to be able to get along pretty well without it. But that didn't teach me anything, being the type of alcoholic that I was. And for the next year, I struggled along doing anything that I possibly could just to get by and to get enough to drink. And a member of my wife's family took pity on her, I suppose, and wanted to see that she ate regular and gave me an opportunity in another line of business. On my promise to be a good boy. And promises were a dime a dozen with me. I probably quit drinking as many times as any individual who ever walked the face of the earth. And I think most of the time that I quit, I really meant it, but I was helpless, powerless to do anything about it. And this position was an in-and-out proposition with me. I'd reach a certain stage, and then I'd blow it all up. I was one of these fellows that would work like heck, you know, get everything in shape, and then it'd be about time to go on a drunk and tear it all down. And, you know, they talk about alcoholics being great workers. You hear it. They're the greatest, you know. They're the hardest workers in the world. They're the best plumbers. They're the best salesmen. They're the best everything. You hear that all over the place. And the reason why they have to work harder than anybody else in the world is to get out of the boss's doghouse. They're in there all the time. They get things going. They go on a drunk. They don't show up for a week. And in order to get back in his good graces again when they go back to work, they work three times harder than anybody else. Not because they have the ambition, but just because of the fact that they have to do it to hold on to their jobs. And that was the position in which I found myself. And about that time, I began to realize that something was wrong with my drinking pattern. I knew I didn't drink like other people. I didn't know what was wrong, but I sincerely tried to do something about it. And I could stay sober at times for 2 solid weeks. And then, bingo. Away I'd go again and shatter everything that I'd built up in those 2 weeks. Just about the time I spent my life, you know, sometimes I've heard people say how monotonous these meetings are. How you hear the same thing over and over and over again. And, you know, in thinking about these statements that I've heard, I wondered many times to myself, what could be more monotonous than an alcoholic's life? Drunk, in trouble, lose your job, have all your creditors chasing you all over town, sober, get back to work like heck, your wife is back speaking to you again, you're out of the boss's doghouse, you've got the creditors off your back, and bingo, you're ready for another one. And it's the same old story over and over and over again. And that's the That was the picture of my life. As my brother-in-law used to say when he'd come down to see me when I'd be getting off a chair, say, how are you feeling? And I was one of these fellows that made a profession of drinking. I mean, I didn't let it interfere with my work at all. And when I finally couldn't drink any longer, I'd lay in bed for 3 or 4 days and kick it out and just have to suffer it out and take about a week before I could get some soup into my stomach. And it was a long process with me. And he'd come down and I'd be sitting there, he'd say, how are you feeling? And he was a wonderful friend of mine. And he'd say, how are you feeling? And now I'd say, I'm afraid I'm going to make it. And he said, never again, I suppose. And I said, no, this is it. This definitely is it. I've had all I want. I've had all the grief and headaches and heartache that I ever intend to have. This time I'm going to do different. You know, a cute little smile had come over his face, and he'd look at me, and he'd say, you so-and-so, you're just getting rested up for the next one. And you know how true that was. We were either on a drunk, getting rested up for the next one, or going on another one. A continuous merry-go-round throughout my whole life. And that same thing, of course, applies to many alcoholics. And the opportunity was presented to me after I began to think about this drinking problem of mine and wanting to do something about it, and I was still a young man. Wish I had a little bit of it today. And the opportunity was presented to me to come to Cleveland. I'm a Bostonian by birth and upbringing. One of the improper ones, I always hasten to add. They're not very proud of me back there, believe me. And I took the opportunity because it was the alcoholic's opportunity to leave all his problems and his troubles and his reputation behind him, so I thought. But I found that when I hit Cleveland, that the same things existed there that existed in Boston. But fortunately for me, I was able to, by sheer determination, to get an advancement in business. And I say fortunately, and I think it was unfortunate probably, because I was the type of arrogant, egotistical alcoholic who, when he was able to accomplish anything, really got porky about it. And I had really showed them now. All I needed was an opportunity to get away from that hick town of Boston and get a chance in a big city where people understood me and people took people on their ability alone and not because they took a little drink too much once in a while. Just give me the opportunity and I knew I could make it. And of course you know what that did to me. That arrogance and pride and egotism put me back where I was before. And there I was in trouble again in this job, after having worked like heck and done something about it and tried to make something of myself and was succeeding to some degree. And they were warning me in this job, but I hadn't learned anything previously because I knew more about this business, too, than anybody else in the world, even though it was a different one than the one before. I knew more about this one than anyone else, too, so how were they going to get along without me here? And I can remember well the last drunk that I went on. My whole life in through there is intermingled with problems and trials and troubles. And when Mike talked this morning, he brought me back through the years and the tears started coming down just a little bit for a hard-boiled guy like me because it brought me back to the tragedy and the heartache and sorrow and mental torture that I had inflicted along the way on those that were dear to me, my wife and my children. How my kids couldn't have anybody in the yard, or how the street was clear when the old man staggered down there. I know all those things, and I know all about the jails, and I know all about every single heartache that goes with this problem of drinking because I've been there, because I've lived it. To tell you that story and to tell you that tale a most horrifying one would take too long. But I finally found myself in the year 1937 at the end of the road. I had gone on a drunk after building myself into a nice position, winning the confidence and respect of the company that I worked for and people that I knew. I finally succeeded, as I had always before, in shattering every single thing that was worthwhile. And I woke up one morning after this drunk was all over, and as I had done times before, I had to go back into the branch manager's office before I could go back to work again. And I went in, and I knew that office real well. You can believe me on this. I knew every scratch that was on the side of the desk that I sat on. I knew every scratch. I knew everything the boss was going to say, and he said them all this day. And he was a great big 6'4" Texan, as tough as they come, but a man that used me like no other man has ever used another in his life. I think he felt sorry for me and wanted to do something to help me. He later became one of my greatest friends in business. And he told me all these things that were wrong and how he couldn't go on. He said, "People are beginning to wonder what you've got on me." And I agreed with everything, sick, shaking, anything to get out of there. And he told me that he was going to give me one more opportunity, but he thought he'd transfer me into the city of Youngstown, away from my friends in Cleveland, who were holding me down every night and pouring that stuff down my throat and getting me drunk. He thought that if he could get me away from there, everything would work itself out. And he gave me my salary check, and he gave me my expense check, as he had done many, many times before. But that was two mistakes he made that day for me. And he said, "Tomorrow morning I want you to report in Youngstown, and I want you to do the job that you're capable of doing, Warren. And we'll forget everything that's gone before." But he added one thing he'd never added before when he said, "But if you don't make it this time, Warren, please don't ever come back anymore." Well, just to get the record straight, I've never been back. And that was it. I got to Youngstown all right. I never did get to work. And there I was. In early July of 1937, out of a job, nowhere to go, nowhere to turn, and getting around in the industry, people were treating me courteously and receiving me politely, but they have nothing for a man of my great ability. Nothing. My reputation had preceded me, but this time it dawned on me that I was washed up and done. This time it hit home that I'd run the string out, that my whole house of cards had fallen in, that my sins had now all caught up with me, and that there was nowhere to go and nowhere to turn. Now I knew I was done, and being the cowardly alcoholic that I was, and this isn't a pretty tale, I gave it all up because it was easier this way and became a bum on Skid Row, doing every single thing that any bum has ever done. In jails and sleeping in fields and freight trains, doorways and what have you. Panhandling on the streets, drinking anything I could lay my hands on. One had to stay drunk constantly to even be able to live with himself a little bit, to numb that thing in there that kept telling him what a dirty, rotten louse he was. And that's the thing that'll get us drunk faster than anything else in the world in this program. When we try to, again to do the things that we did previously, to cut the corners and to cheat and chisel and connive as we formerly did, that causes that little thing in there to act up and keep banging away and bringing us to task for the kind of person that we are. Because when that happens, when that thing keeps telling us what a louse we are, there's only one way the alcoholic knows where to go, and that's right, fast, real quick-like, back into the neck of that bottle. That's the answer to every single thing that the alcoholic knows. There is the reason why, in a great many instances, he goes back. Because he's driven back through the mental torture that he goes through. Because he's again chiseled and cheated and connived. He hasn't followed the program, and that's why it's important each and every single day that we live to be a part of this program. That's why it's important that we never become smug and complacent and self-satisfied, regardless of what our period of time of sobriety may happen to be. That's why we never can quit, because this is a job that will be with us until the day that we die. Because as we go along in this program, we learn, or we should learn, and we must learn the two most important things that the alcoholic has to know. First, that once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And that the next drink that we should be unfortunate enough to take will just be the continuation of the drunk that we left off when we were privileged to become a part of this great program of AA. And second, and equally as important as the first, is the fact that we must recognize and know and let become a part of us permanently that never, 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 under any circumstances, is a drink the solution to a single problem that we have. And while that's elementary and fundamental in every single respect, we must constantly repeat it to ourselves. We must constantly remind ourselves that no matter what the problem is, no matter how great the trial, the reverse, or disappointment with which we're confronted, a drink will only make that situation worse. And we must be reminded each and every single time that we go through these things that we have the means whereby we can overcome every single problem that we have in life through the medium of the principles of this great program of AA. And there I was on the bum. And then I began to realize for the first time in my life what I had given up. The arrogant, egotistical individual who went through life doing every single thing he wanted to do, when and how he wanted to do it, without regard or consideration for anyone else. I didn't care what anyone else wanted except me. Every single thing that I did with myself in mind. What was it going to do for me? And here I was now with the realization, the stark realization that I had given up every single thing in life that was worthwhile. And as the people walked down the street with their the family units, my heart would bleed. And I developed an obsession for one more opportunity. I wanted just one more chance in life. I thought that if I could just find the solution to my drinking problem, that somehow everything would work itself out. What a fantastic thought to a man on the bum. And there, as Mike said, it wasn't any doing of mine. Evidently, there were a lot of prayers. And I know there were that caused this thing to happen. And I developed them between the years of 1937 and July the 3rd when I took what I hope is my last drink in 1939. I developed an obsession to get sober and to have one more opportunity in life. I wanted to be a part of things. And I cried about it in my loneliness. I begged God, please, God, help me. I'll make it this time. I knew all those words. I said them many, many times. Every time I was in the jam, there wasn't anyone who could pray more fervently than I could, who could affect the pious attitudes and what have you. I even tried to kid God most of my life. But the minute that situation about which I was praying to get out of had resolved itself, I took full charge again. I didn't need the help of God in the man until I got in the next jam. But inasmuch as I was in jams frequently in my life, I knew all the words and the attitudes. But this time, somehow, I must have meant it. This time, it must have been for real, because here I am. And I like to feel that I am the one individual who was privileged to become a part of this great program of AA without having done the first thing in his whole life to justify a break of this kind. This is the most important opportunity and privilege that has ever come into the life of the alcoholic. The opportunity to build again on the chaos and misery and grief and heartache of yesterday, a life so unbelievably worthwhile that it's indescribable. To be able, just by the simple process of becoming associated with this great program of AA, to sweep under the rug all the sins and grief and heartache of years and to start all over again, equal with everyone else. What an opportunity, unbelievable. And for this great opportunity, I like to feel that each and every single one of us is charged with the responsibility of doing something about it each and every single day that he or she lives in gratitude for what has been given to us. This is one thing that, regardless of background, of position in life, position in society, industry, the professions, how much money we have or don't have, what side of the tracks that we live on, this is one thing that each and every single one of us has the same opportunity in, to build for ourselves the ideals and values that go to make up a worthwhile life. We're not all going to have the same kind of jobs, make the same kind of money, live in the same kind of homes. But this program wasn't designed to give us a better automobile or a better job or to keep us up with the Joneses. It wasn't designed to smooth the path of life and to remove the reverses and disappointments and failures and heartaches that go to make up everyday life. But rather, as I see it, it was conceived and designed to build us as individuals strong enough in character, with faith and spiritual fortitude great enough that will enable us to meet and to face and to be able to overcome every single problem that we have in life without flinching, without running away, without using it as an excuse or an alibi to get back into the neck of that bottle. That's the reason for this program. This program guarantees nothing from a material standpoint, but it guarantees every single value that's worthwhile in life. If we'll accept it in its entirety, if we'll believe in it thoroughly, and to the very best of our ability, each and every single day that we live, put into effect its precepts and its practices. This is a beautiful program, but it's a program that requires work and effort. This is a program that is the responsibility of the individual. The tools are made available to each and every single one of us in equal quantity to accomplish for ourselves the things that are worthwhile in life. And if we never do anything else, if we never get a better job, if we never get back that wife that divorced us or that husband that divorced us, If we endeavor to accomplish anything else in life, if we follow the principles of this program and are faithful to the program and let its ideals and philosophies become a part of us, we are able to build for ourselves the things without which every sober successfully, he or she is a complete flop. But if the alcoholic can stay sober successfully in this great program of AA, then he or she is able to put every single responsibility which is his or hers in life in its rightful place. Then they can become a good father, a good mother, a good husband, a good wife, a good employer, a good employee, a good friend. They can be every single thing that's worthwhile. But again, I repeat, unless we can do that job of staying sober successfully, then we are a complete flop in everything else that we tackle in life. This is a big job, as I said, and a full-time job and a challenge to every single thing that's worthwhile within each and every single one of us. Staying sober is no job for sissies or panty waists. This is a job that requires faith and perseverance and courage of the highest order. The easiest thing we ever did was drink. We used every excuse, reason, or alibi, real or imaginary, to attain that end. It takes courage not to drink under the same set of circumstances, probably, that caused us to drink previously, or that we used as an excuse to drink previously. A big job, but by the same token, it's a paradox. As I look back, it seems so comparatively easy. How this ever could happen to a guy like me, I'll never know. But you know, if we become naive, as I did when they told me in the beginning this story, if we'll just believe and quit analyzing and psychoanalyzing ourselves and quit being experts on everything in life and just concentrate on the job that we have to do, the job of staying sober, it is so comparatively easy because the tools are there. Upon how well we use them will depend our success or failure in this great program of AA. You know, most of us thought we were pretty big. Most of us, and we tell you that at any given time. We tell you how great we were, how much we knew. Boy, all you had to do was just ask me. I'd tell you real fast-like, and I'd regale you for half an hour with my greatness. And I think we were all the same way. But when we become a part of this program, we then become honest with ourselves to the point of where we recognize and realize how unimportant and insignificant we were in this whole scheme of things. We realize then how very much we need help and how very badly we should seek that help. And we begin to realize for the first time in our lives, in our insignificance, that there is help to be had from a God of our own choice, our own understanding. Somebody greater than we. And you know, sometimes I've heard people say, I don't get the spiritual angle of this thing. And I'm not critical of that either. I can understand that. A great many of us got a long way from anything that was considered spiritual. And you know, sometimes when we think we can do this job on our own, sometimes when it's hard for us to conceive a God of our own choice, sometimes when we tell ourselves, I'm not worthy to go to God and ask His help, just let's remember this. And particularly when we think that we can do this job because we possess the ability to do so, just let's bring ourselves down to earth and put ourselves in the proper perspective as it relates to God and ourselves, and just ask ourselves one little question. If you were as smart as you thought you were, if you had all the great ability you thought you possessed, what are you doing here in the first place? It's as simple as that. We all thought we had it. And didn't each and every single one of us, regardless of what his background of anything may have been, didn't each and every single one of us have to become a part of this great program, admit that we were flops and failures? We didn't. Well, just take the first step. We were admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. All the degrees in the world behind our name, all the prestige and power of business position, social position, or anything else was of no avail. We were flops and failures in this business of living life successfully. When we put it on that basis, it certainly shouldn't be hard for us to recognize that there's somebody far greater than we. And it's been my observation and my personal experience that all the help that anyone ever needs is his or hers for the asking, provided we are willing to do something to merit it. And as Dr. Bob used to say, years ago, I heard him say it so many times because I had a close association with him. Faith without works is death. Every single phase and part of this program is tied in with the two great commandments, the love of God and the love of fellow man. Doesn't it make sense? Certainly, that if we want a favor in life from a friend or an acquaintance, that we must have indicated by our attitude in the past that we were worthy of the consideration that we asked. If we want a better job in industry, doesn't it make sense that we must merit that job by our loyalty to the company, by our abilities and so forth and so on, that we must merit the consideration that we ask in that instance? If that is so, how much more important is it that the help that we need so badly, not only with our alcoholic problem, but with every single problem with which we're confronted every day that we live. Doesn't it make sense that the help of God that we need so badly, that we must do something to merit it? It doesn't make sense, does it, that we can this morning say, please, God, help me to stay sober today and go about our business ignoring other people, refusing to give of ourselves a little bit, doing anything we want to do, when and how we wanted to do it. For this help that we get, we have some tremendous responsibility in this great program. And I think one of the greatest responsibilities that we have is to be a good example so that we can hold out the hand of hope for those yet to come, as someone so generously and unselfishly held it out for us one day. A tremendous responsibility. We never know how many lives that we affect by the way that we conduct ourselves in this program. And I have no criticism of those who don't do the job successfully. But I do say that we have a responsibility, that people are watching us, people who knew us for what we were. As I remember my own street, staring up and down there day after day, and then all at once, wonder of wonders, I come home sober one night, and they're looking out from behind the curtains, and they got the telephones going all over the street, and they say, guess what? Chisholm came home sober tonight. And it happens the next night, and the next night, and the next night. And along that street somewhere is some wife, some husband, some mother, some father, some sweetheart, somebody who is watching us with a problem in their own family, hoping that we'll do that job successfully so that we can help that one in whom they're interested. If we do it well, then we do give someone else their rightful opportunity in life. If we do it poorly, we may deprive someone of his or her rightful chance. It's a big responsibility. And then we have the responsibility of giving of ourselves and our time and efforts and talents to help other people afflicted as we are. Who else can do this job of helping the other drunk? Who else can win his confidence? Who else, as a result of what we've been able to do, can show him how to do this job of staying sober successfully? Tremendous responsibility. It doesn't make sense, does it, that we can get the help that we need for ourselves when we refuse to help our fellow man? But the beautiful part of this, while it is an obligation, the one that benefits most from this help that we give is we, the individuals who give it. Each and every single time that we do it, we're building just a little bit more insurance against the day when we may have to draw on every single bit of reserve that we build up to get us by some particularly rough situation without going back to the bottle. Into the life of every single alcoholic who ever lived will come tragedy or heartache someday. And when the alcoholic is confronted with a crisis, then he or she must be strong. And the one way to get strong, the one way to fortify oneself, the one way to build that impregnable wall is at every single opportunity to give of ourselves, to have other, to help other people have the same chance in life that someone gave us. And you know, the thing pays dividends. What is more soul satisfying than to know that you've taken part, have been privileged to take part in the rehabilitation of someone else? To watch that individual on whom the world, like myself, that they thought couldn't stay sober for 24 minutes, never mind 24 years, the betting was that I couldn't make it for a day. And the world turned thumbs down and said, oh, he's hopeless. We'll never make it. And then watch that individual grow and develop and take his or her rightful place in society, in industry, in family life. Watch the kids come from out from under the bed, figuratively, no longer afraid of the old man when he comes home. Watch the smile come back into the face of that wife. What a beautiful experience. Every single time that we do it, we gain more for ourselves than anything that we put into it. What a beautiful privilege and a beautiful opportunity. And you know, I walked in, and you think it doesn't pay dividends, let me tell you just a little story. And I could go on talking all night, but I'm afraid I'm talking too long already. But I walked into a nursing home in Cleveland one night on a Saturday evening, and I can remember this so well as if it was last night. And they lined up around there to get the benefit of my great knowledge and experience. And to the left of me was a fellow who was, I could see, was a little rum dummy. He had just come in that day. And as I talked and told of my experiences and about this program of AA and so forth, I could see the tears streaming down his cheeks. And when I ended my story, I shook hands all around and wished them luck and so forth and so on. I finally got to him and he said to me, what did you say your name was? And I said, Warren Chisholm. And he said, are you Jerry's brother? And I said, yeah. He said, I've had your name in my pocket for 3 years. He said, I was supposed to look you up when I came to Cleveland, but I never got around to it. My brother lives in Boston, Massachusetts. He was a personal friend and a pal of my brother's. My brother knew he had a drinking problem and told him to look me up. As a result of that visit that night, this fellow is sober now, some 22 or 23 years, somewhere around there. But that isn't the end of the story. My oldest boy, started going the same path as the old man. And nobody could talk to him. He knew more. He was even smarter than I was. And nobody could talk to him. We had experts, including Clarence Snyder, who couldn't even make a dent in him. And if he can't make a dent in you, I don't think anybody can. Nobody could do anything to him. And he's going down, down, down. His mother's going frantic, and I'm not much better, but I'm not saying a word. His mother's trying to engineer the whole thing. And out of a clear sky one day, we finally decide that we ought to get this fella, who is a friend of my brother's, to talk to him. And guess what? He convinced him the first time he talked to him, and my son has been in AA and sober better than 10 years. If you don't think it pays dividends, try it sometime. It's a responsibility that pays tremendous dividends. And then in this program, we have the opportunity of getting together. And through the exchange of our experience and philosophy and ideas of the workings of this program, we learn just a little bit more each and every single time that we go about how to do this, the most important job in our lives, just a little bit better. If we seek to learn, if we go not wondering who's going to speak tonight, or I'm not going because he's long-winded or something else, but if we go realizing that we have much to learn, we learn just a little bit more each and every single time that we go. That's going to help us in the future. How many times it's happened to me? The day has gone bad, and most of them go bad. Most days I should have stood in bed, honest to goodness. They go bad all the time. But you know, if I can get myself up off that chair and put a little cold water in my face and get to a meeting that night, when I walk through that door, something happens. All the problems and trials and troubles and reverses and disappointments and self-pity of the day vanish. They dissipate into thin air. Why? I'm amongst my own kind of people. I'm amongst the people who understand me, who want me. There are no troubles there. There are no troubles but the common problem that each of us has, and each in his or her own way trying to help the other. That's why it's important. That's why we can never, as I say, graduate in this program. This job is never done. You know, staying sober is only the beginning of the job that we have to do. There are so many things wrong with us. The inherent cancerous traits of character that are so much a part of the alcoholic. The arrogance, the pride, the resentment, the hate, the self-pity. All those things constantly that we have to battle with. Never becoming perfect, never even approaching perfection. That's why we must constantly be learning every single thing that we can about how to do this job just a little bit better. Keeping us conscious constantly of the tremendous job that we have to do. And I'm sure everyone has had this experience of having downed a beautiful case of resentment and was just about ready to reach around and pat himself on the back when over here a plan that he had made and had thought would develop blew up in his face, and we immediately develop a beautiful case of self-pity that we have to go to work on. We must constantly be working on something because we're the kind of people that if we don't have problems and troubles, we create them so that we'll have something to work on. This is a big job. A full-time job, but each and every single one of us has been equipped with the tools to do it successfully. Each and every single one of us has been given that beautiful opportunity of building for himself or herself a life that's so worthwhile, as I said previously, that it's impossible to begin to describe it. If we come into this program, and if every wanting to get sober, above everything else in the world, if each and every single day that we live, we have that overwhelming desire to stay sober and to be right, and we'll accept the principles of this program in its entirety, and we'll do the things that this program recommends without compromise of any kind, never becoming perfect, but doing the best we can at all times, then it gets me right back to that promise that they made me a little better than 24 years ago in a room in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, that provided you follow the principles and practices of this great program, not only will you find the solution to your drinking problem, but the means whereby you can meet and face and overcome every single problem that you have in life, without finding it necessary to go back to where you were before you were privileged to become a part of this great program of AA. Thank you very much.